All right, welcome to the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee. Housekeeping, for those of you that aren't aware, shut your cell phones off or put them on silent, or you get to contribute to our coffee fund. And there is coffee over there for everyone in the room, so if you haven't had your morning cup or need a second, we hope it'll be exciting enough to keep everyone alert, but in case it's not, the coffee's there, the chair has a cup, so when we get a quorum, we have a little just housekeeping to do, but until that time, we want to get moving on our agenda and hopefully get everyone out of here early. So first up, we have Rick Roney. And then we're going to hear also from the commissioner and anyone else. If someone does want to testify or say something, you know, let the pages know, and then they'll get your name to them, and they will then bring the name up here. We'll make sure anyone who wants to say something should come up. But
yes, sir. Thank you.
Please. You can bring whoever you want.
Thank you. Lynette Liberty. Let me come up.
All right. And again, members, just a reminder, yesterday we went through the auditor's report, which we ran upstairs to get some extra copies. We probably should have just tucked them back in your file folders. I don't know where they all ended up, but maybe some of you took them back to your office. But we'll get some of that in case we got to refer to it. And that was my fault. I should have told folks to put them in their folders. And then I also asked staff, in your folders you've got copies of the statutes that refer to the state's role in county veteran service officers. And then you also just got a letter from Jim Cleary, our staff person upstairs. And I got to read your letter, Jim, but he's referencing the statutes. And Jim, I asked you, if you look at 190, and by the way, these are handouts out here too for people that want them, but if you look at statute 197.605, you were going to tell me which parts of that statute have been there since 1945. Oh, Jim isn't here? Oh, I'm talking to air right now. Oh, that's great. Now, where did our staff go? Are you leaving too soon or what? Huh? All right, Newt Levitch will do this. And no, I'm just kidding. We'll wait till Jim gets back. I'm not paying attention. I don't know where Jim went. So let's just go with you first, and we'll look at the statutes once he comes back. So basically, we've seen the auditor's report. I guess we'd like your read on some of the points that it talked about, you know, in particular as it pertained to you. But then also, more broadly, what this committee needs to start understanding, and what we want to do is we're going to see, I don't know when, we've been asking for it for a long time, and I'm not blaming the commissioner, even though he's sitting here. I won't ever blame him for anything, but we haven't seen any governor's bill yet on veterans' supplemental budget issues, although we talked about them last November 11th. But when that comes, obviously the department sees some needs, including, I think, a coordinating position to help coordinate or get information or make sure we have websites that are similar, et cetera, for helping our county veteran service officers. And I wish we had the bill here, but we don't yet. But we want to hear from you what your needs are. You know, what do you want to tell the committee and the legislature are your needs, whether it's transportation needs or housing vouchers or counseling services that are lacking in your counties for veterans? Or, I mean, what are you seeing? Because what we're trying to do is between now and next year, which is a full budget year again, we want to address that and start laying out a meaningful way that we can deliver services to veterans out there, an improved way. We do it in a meaningful way now, but how can we improve and be even more effective and more directive to our veterans of all ages? And I think, as you know, we have a lot of young veterans now that are joining the ranks out there, and we're concerned about that. So we're really asked for some broad information from you today and anyone else in the audience that wants to address those types of questions. That's what we're after today, for information. So with that, please introduce yourself and proceed in any way you see fit.
Yes, Chairman. Thank you. My name is Rick Roney, and I have Lynette Liberty with me. I will give you an overview of our position, and then I'm going to ask Bert to speak a little bit on the OLA report. And then in my overview, it has some talking points and some things that we're concerned and issues that we think we need to work on. So I'll go ahead and get started on that, if that's okay. It's a prepared statement. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished legislators and colleagues, my name is Rick Drone, the CDSO from Lake of the Woods County and current president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. I am also the mayor of my town and have been for 8 years, so I understand and greatly appreciate you inviting us today. We have several of our county service officers in attendance today to offer their support, and their presence reflects our common dedication and commitment to our state's veterans.
Let me, before you go on, raise your hand if you're a county veteran service officer. Oh, my goodness. Okay, very good. We'll hear from all of you later, right? One at a time? All right.
Thank you. On behalf of the association, I thank you for asking us to come and discuss with you the needs of our veterans. We have been asked to discuss four issues concerning our veterans. First being Minnesota's current veterans programs. Number two, new and emerging needs of our veterans. Three, the veterans-related priorities for the 08 legislative session. And four, our response to the OLA report. As for our current Minnesota programs, we feel much has been done in the past several years, and for that we thank you for your support. This state stands in the forefront of the nation in most veterans programs, and we would like to continue to lead in supporting our veterans. Our current programs are, on the whole, effective and on target. The initiatives of 06 and 07 sessions are serving our veterans well. As for emerging needs, I believe additional funding should be provided to counties so we can ensure our veterans have access to their VA care. This would be money well spent. There is no statewide program for veterans travel and would most likely be infeasible to develop one. But some money dedicated through the MDVA and channeled to each county or such would be a great step. A second initiative might be to ensure access to mental health needs for all veterans. We need to ensure all mental health agencies, such as local hospitals and clinics and county social service departments, etc., are ready and able to respond to the emergent symptoms of PTSD. It's imperative, especially to the outlying communities, to have appropriate mental health care available 24/7 to our veterans. As for the 08 session priorities, we are very pleased to have a governor who is clearly veteran-friendly. We support the majority of his 15 initiatives, though we have a few we really support and a few that we support with comments. Number one, we give strong support to the 100% exemption for state income tax for military pay and pensions. We believe this could pay large dividends for the state in the near future by attracting a pool of highly skilled and ethically centered leaders back to our state. Number two, we know these initiatives will cost state taxpayers dollars, and we suggest a relook at a couple of very good programs to see if any efficiencies can be realized. For example, Link Vet Line, a good program, but one that may in some ways be duplicating services already being provided to state veterans. We strongly support the crisis line aspect, but question paying dollars on efforts to advise veterans on state benefits and VA benefits, some things we do on a daily basis. Perhaps we could channel that money to a medical travel grant for counties.
And anyone ask questions as you go, and again, the department can clarify this too, but I thought the Link Vet Line was a referral line. So if they called in and said, I'm curious about a benefit I can receive through the GI Bill or whatever, that they would then give the county, a county veteran service office, here's the number, it's local to you, I'd start there with that. Isn't that the kind of referral they're giving? They're not sitting and spending hours trying to explain the benefits on the link.
I think
there,
I would... JJ, you want to...
Your understanding? Or I'll just lay it out there, but maybe the department can clarify that when we come forward, because I hadn't heard that. It's supposed to be, I think, more or less a referral line. It's someone that answers the phone, has a cadre of numbers and references, so that it's really a line where vets, it's supposed to be a line where vets can call one-stop shop and then get the right number to the right person right there, right now.
Right.
So hopefully I think that's going on. Hopefully we're not duplicating what you're
doing. We're not accusing it of that. We're just saying that it's something that should be looked at.
Right. But if you hear of any of those things, we do want to know them.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
We like to support for our troops license plate programs and agree that all funds raised should be spent on veterans programs. Number four, the state soldiers assistance programs are a great avenue to provide meaningful and fairly timely assistance to veterans and families who are somewhat economically challenged. This program can be made even better by adding an option which would allow a veteran to get needed hearing aids. Number five, we'd like to be a partner in the Veterans Affairs Marketing Initiative. We believe dollars spent to raise awareness regarding veterans' benefits and services are best spent at a local level, so we would like a voice in this. The CVSO grant program has been successful, and we'd like to see this continue, but we'd also like to partner with MDVA on how these grant dollars are distributed, the enhancement and CVSO operational grant dollars. And I'll go into the OLA response now. Regarding the OLA report, we disagree with the report. We believe it inaccurately portrays data and suggests conclusions that will not be in the long-term best interest of our veterans or the state of Minnesota. At this time, I'd like to introduce Lynette Labrie, CVSO for Sherburne County, and have her talk about some of the statistics that we think are untrue and why they're untrue, if that's okay, sir.
Yeah, that'd be great. Introduce yourself for the tape.
Yes. Good morning, Chairman and distinguished guests here. My name is Lynette Labrie, and I'm the Sherburne County Veterans Service Officer. I also serve as the judge advocate for the Minnesota Association of County Veterans Service Officers. Today, we are coming to you to present to you a very important topic. You were briefed on it yesterday, the OLA report, and we would like to highlight some of the concerns that we have with that report and its relevance to the recommendations. As you know, the OLA report, we believe, was in essence a report card of how well county veterans service officers were serving their veterans. And when we received that report, there's some background information about how that survey was conducted, but some of the data that was contained in the report was somewhat troublesome. The report was very comprehensive in the fact that it contained a lot of data. There was a lot of different data sets that was extracted from federal data reports. Also, it was in compilation of other census reports and other veteran data that was at both the federal and state levels. In looking at that data, however, we do not believe that that data was comprehensive enough and that it didn't always speak to the duties that we perform on a daily basis. We do not believe that it was a comprehensive report card and that there were gaps in that. And the reason why it's important for us to bring this to you today is because those gaps, we believe, may affect some of the conclusions and some of the recommendations that was contained in the OLA report. For example, the report seemed to spotlight the disparities between the counties. There was data sets that talked about CVSO budgets and staffing levels per veteran. It talked about counties with the highest and lowest percentage of veterans receiving compensation in the year 2005, and the highest and lowest dollar amounts in those in 2005 also. It also talked about percentage of veterans receiving benefits in counties with highest income, relationship between county population density and federal benefits received. There was also some data that talked about selected characteristics of a veteran, for example, the gender, age, race, the period of service, and then the percentage of veterans within those characteristics that were receiving benefits. So those were some of the comparable data sets that was spotlighted in the report. And then the report essentially was portrayed in a way that spotlighted the highs and lows, the top three counties or top five counties in one area and the lower counties in the same data set. However, our concern is that that doesn't tell the whole story. It shows the highest levels and the lowest levels. However, we know that Hennepin County will never resemble Hubbard County in almost any data set. We know that there will be disparities between that type of data. So for us to look at it as a type of report card, as a method of really analyzing how well we are doing overall from year to year, it really doesn't tell that story. We don't believe that it was comprehensive. It didn't go to the next level to tell that story. Comparisons were made between county budgets, county ratios, county oversights. Most concerning, there was a statistic that was repeated several times throughout the report. In fact, it was in the margins of the report. And that statistic, I believe, was presented because of its significance, or perceived significance. And the statistic stated that only 12% of veterans are receiving veterans benefits. And 22% of veterans are receiving VA medical care. The statistic implies that there's a large pool of underserved veterans. However, because the statistic was broken down into two parts, the 12% and 22%, it gives the reader the impression that the number of veterans receiving benefits is actually lower than it is. Essentially, if added together, the total percentage of veterans receiving benefits is potentially as high as 34%. However, we know that there may be an overlap of benefits of compensation and medical, so it probably is somewhere in between. The statistic is formulated. This is an important part of how statistics are gathered and used. The statistic is formulated and based on veteran population in Minnesota. However, the OLA report does not reveal that the veteran population numbers are not exact numbers. The veteran population model is merely an estimate that's derived at the federal level. This federal model takes into account census data, military data, reported deaths, and migration. Therefore, we don't really know exactly how many veterans actually reside in Minnesota. And then the estimates become less reliable from the county to the state to the local level. Furthermore, we do not know exactly how many veterans are actually eligible to receive benefits. There seems to be a prevailing presumption that every veteran is eligible for VA benefits. Although we wish that were the case, it simply is not. For example, not every veteran will choose to apply for benefits, even if they are eligible to receive benefits. A case and scenario is that if a veteran resides far away from a VA medical center or has private health insurance, they may choose not to enroll in the VA health care unless, you know, they have that immediate need to do that. Furthermore, not every veteran is eligible for VA health care. This comes as a shock to many because most people assume that this is the most basic benefit that could be provided to our veterans. However, it simply is not the case. In January 2003, the rules were changed. And if veterans were not enrolled on that date, they could only be enrolled after that date if they met one of the new eligibility rules. And one of those eligibility rules is that they either had to have a service-connected compensation or meet one of the other requirements in the priority groups, or they had to have an income that was below a geographic means test. Additionally, not all veterans meet basic benefit criteria for federal or state income or state benefits. Some of those factors that will affect a benefit is, in some cases, some benefits are only afforded wartime veterans. Sometimes household income is a factor in their eligibility for a benefit. Sometimes it's based on assets, or whether they have a service-connected disability. Many benefits have an expiration date. For example, the GI Bill, which they have a 10-year limitation on that program, or vocational rehab that they have to apply within so many years of attaining a disability rating. There are also other qualifying factors within each program. We do not believe that the OLA report went into enough depth that talks about those issues and factors that may quantify and speak to the issue of why those numbers appear to be low. Additionally, the OLA report failed to recognize that federal data reports are based on zip codes. This is significant because although veterans may reside in one county, their respective post office is in another. Therefore, the county with the post office is credited with acquiring the benefit. This is troublesome because the proposed recommendations in the OLA become, if they become formulated into state statute, a CDSO's performance measures and reappointment may be based on data that is inaccurate. CDSOs, another factor that is very important and significant, is that CDSOs do not adjudicate claims. Okay, we help veterans apply for the benefit, but we do not determine outcomes. Therefore, variances from county to county should not be viewed as an anomaly, but should be expected based on a variety of variables, as I mentioned. Much of the data contained in the report was extracted from existing federal and state reports, such as census data, veteran population estimates, demographics, etc., which was used primarily for long-term projections, growth estimates, budgeting, and programming. While much of the data contained in the report was interesting, not all of it was entirely relevant to the issue that I'm speaking about today. For example, the OLA report does not provide county statistics from 1 year to the next. And we believe that that is really the only way to truly measure trends. If it's our report card, if it's a comprehensive report card, we should be able to see what's transpiring over a period of time. Are there increases in benefits? Are there decreases in benefits? And by using consistently the same data that's looked at from year to year. However, in spotlighting the highs and lows, that doesn't really show the total picture. The omission of such basic and readily available data makes it impossible for anyone to fully analyze and identify key upward trends or downward trends. For example, the OLA did not report from that 2004 to 2006, Minnesota compensation and pension benefits increased over $90 million in a two-year period, despite a reduction of veterans by over 16,000 veterans in the same two-year period. Also, it did not reflect that from that same time period, VA medical benefits increased over $74 million despite a decrease in the veteran population. The data also does not reflect the workload or the effort, such as the number of veterans served or the applications submitted. Another concerning point is that there didn't appear to be any acknowledgement or recognition of our professional organization, the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, which is comprised of all Minnesota CVSOs, complete with a charter, elected officials, and a variety of committees, including certification, training, legislative liaison, ethics, and others. MACVSO and AMC was never ever considered as a source of remedy for the recommendations or the shortfalls. Also missing from the report was any reference to a nationally recognized effort to troop reintegration last year, which was a collaborated effort between Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and the County Veterans Service Offices, where CVSOs went to Fort McCoy and there was put in place a reintegration program to receive the most recent returning veterans. And in addition to that, our association received an award from the State Adjutant General. We believe that the OLA report does not reflect over 50% of what we actually do. It did not provide real data pertaining to our comprehensive duties in assisting veterans with a multitude of federal, state, and county programs, which includes education benefits, voc rehab, adaptable housing and automobile, death and burial benefits, homeless programs, county transportation programs, discharge upgrades, awards and medals, veterans preference, claim development, appeals, and the list goes on. What we're concerned about is because there were omissions in these areas, that we believe that there were erroneous conclusions drawn from that because it doesn't reveal the whole picture. Most importantly, we believe that the OLA failed to recognize CVSO's primary role, and that is the role of a veterans advocate. While the report was interesting, much of the data was wholly irrelevant and essentially had no bearing in some of the OLA's recommendations and conclusions. The OLA suggests that the current structure does not provide adequate accountability. However, it does not discuss in detail our direct accountability to our county board, our county administrator, deputy county administrators, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and the Association of County Veterans Service Officers. Additionally, CVSOs are indirectly accountable to multiple service organizations, thousands of veterans, and other VA and non-VA entities. CVSOs are not without goals, objectives, mandates, rules, regulations, supervision, control, standards, evaluations, audits, or scrutiny. All of these are elements and echelons that are intact. We believe that any expanded language to the statute will result in unfunded mandates and increased bureaucratic layering without providing any tangible benefit to the veteran. Although the OLA recommendation does not formally result in the CVSOs becoming a state employee, it would in fact establish an employer-employee relationship between Minnesota DVA and CVSOs through the centralized control, simply by expanding the state statute. We believe that will severely restrict our effectiveness. As we find ourselves being redirected to crunching numbers and taking on slam-dunk claims that would ensure a payout in the form of measured performance standards, this may be at the expense of the veteran that needs help getting his prescription refilled, or the widow seeking comfort and conversation, or the suicidal veteran we take up to the VA, or the homeless veteran that we look for transitional housing, or a referral to a food shelf. Additionally, or getting a veteran his medals, or locating a discharge. All of these services are vital to veterans, and it's things that we do on a daily basis. However, they are immeasurable and largely unmeasurable because there is no measurable value. We would argue, however, that it is some of the most important, time-intensive, and time-sensitive work we do every single day. A great amount of CVSO's daily effort is put into endeavors that don't lend easily to themselves to measurement. However, if CVSO performance standards are implemented and our four-year reappointment is determined largely by the quantity and monetary value, our roles will be reduced. We cannot allow this to happen. Our advocacy role is paramount to our relevancy. Furthermore, once our autonomy begins to be chipped away at, begins to be eroded because controls are shifted from the county to the state level, then our role as advocates will be minimized and our influence neutralized. Currently, we are still a watchdog. We can be that and not fear retribution. Every day, we diffuse and cut through red tape that stands between the veteran and their benefits. But to be effective in doing this, we must remain outside the VA system or the state system. It is an absolute must that we keep the checks and balances system in place. This was done intentionally, not by mere coincidences or accidents. The originators of the original state statute knew that by keeping us at the level of local representation and by keeping us autonomous, that we would be at our very best to advocate and represent the constituency for which all that we could possibly muster. Finally, we believe that our autonomy and our advocacy role is paramount at a time where DOD medical facilities, VA medical centers, and veterans' homes are being overextended by their increased demands. As we are aware, our role as an advocate becomes paramount in those situations as well. Mr. Chair, that concludes my comments. I thank you again for the opportunity to speak on behalf of our association members.
So those are your comments to the report now, right?
They're the comments to the report. We are preparing a written response. We will have an association meeting next week. And
we would like to get your written comments that you read, too, sometime. So you can just get them to us electronically. We can have those available.
Okay. And we are preparing a written response to the OLA report.
Right.
It's just about complete.
Right.
I hope to have it to you within 2 weeks. We're going to have a board meeting next week. Go over it, revise it, approve it, and then have it forwarded to you. If I could find out who to
Okay. A couple of things to this point, and or to the I got to remember your name. I know her first name's Lynette LeBray, right?
Yes.
All right. To Ms. LeBray and to members, I think this is a good time. If you in your file, you have the statute. And again, as legislative body, we're kind of interested in how the statutes mesh with the current system, and certainly what we can do to either add or subtract to those statutes. If you look on the second page, and Mr. Cleary is here now, we were talking about you, Mr. Cleary, when you were out of the room. Did you know that?
My ear's burning.
Yeah, I figured. If you look at 197.605, I would direct you to a couple lines. Under Subdivision 1, every veteran service officer appointed under sections, blah, 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 shall be under the general supervision of the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs as to the methods of operation. So I'm guessing that probably is the original. Which part of this statute is, if you see the history on the bottom, they go back to 1945. And Mr. Clear, do you know which part of that statute was that the 1945 piece?
Mr. Chairman, I did look at the statutory history, and virtually everything you see here was appeared in 1945.
Okay.
There were just very minor changes made since.
There might be a few people in the audience that were around then. I know Representative Leader was not in the legislature, but serving his country and becoming an outstanding veteran at that time, but most of us weren't. And I think from my perspective, and obviously the committee can weigh in, what the legislators' auditors report did for me was say, let's review everyone's role in this again. Let's go back to the original enacting statutes. Let's understand if they're still pertinent today or if we need to upgrade them, say, a year from now. Nothing this year. So that's the first part. I just want to go through these. If you go down to Subdivision 3, I think there's some significant things. Obviously, where the counties come in, it also says the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, in the last paragraph, shall not apply to the appointment, tenure, compensation, working conditions. So clearly, they're saying this is a county position, and they really have no say in how they're compensated or how long they serve or how they're hired. And then, if we go down to Subdivision 4, it also states, and again, this is a partnership the way it reads, the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs shall establish a certification process for veteran service officers. In doing so, the Commissioner shall, not may, but shall consult with the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. So again, we need to understand, is there a certification process in place? Not telling you how to do your job, but to train. When I get a license as a real estate appraiser, I get a license, you know, based on Minnesota law and best practices and all the other things, but then I go out and proceed in my practice the way I want. And I think that's what this certification, in my mind, would be pertaining to, do we have a way of training and certifying that these officers out there are the very best in the state, as we know they are, and go through some sort of process. And then lastly, under classified as county employees sections, again, I see this more as a partnership. Veterans service officers, and it reads, are employees of the county by which they employed, so it confirms that again, and are under the exclusive jurisdiction control of such counties. But then it doesn't stop there. It says, and the Department of Veterans Affairs, as herein provided. So again, they're clearly saying, I think, that there's a partnership, and there should be for a lot of these things. And I think we're not arguing that at all. But I think it's helpful to review the statutes as a starting point to move ahead. As to the specific recommendations in the auditor's report, you know, again, they are recommendations. And I always take, I think this committee is a glass half full kind of committee. So we're not here to condemn or do anything else. We're here to say, I think, like you are, there was a lot of interesting information and a lot of analysis here on a lot of things, some of it pertinent, some of it not, but how do we take this now and move forward? You know, I hear you very well, and people have the recommendation sheet in front of them from the summary. You know, the first one was the legislature should require county veteran service officers to collect and report key performance information to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Again, I don't know what that means exactly, you know, I agree with you. Just like we don't want teachers teaching to the test in our schools, we don't want you finding, you know, the sickest or the most needy veteran out there that can get the most benefits and just focus on that case so that your next report looks better.
Right.
That's not what you're out there for,
right.
And we know that. And so I believe the Vet Department understands that too. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't sit down over the summer and say, how can we help each other? When we move down, for example, the department should implement a user-friendly statewide management information system. I think absolutely. Why shouldn't we all be on the same program paid for by the state, not the counties, to set up a program and a computer site that you folks can use and has all that information in a uniform manner? So each county then has access to that, and how can we share information, I think, is the biggest thing. How can we improve from county to county? Because you know as well as I do, and again, we used it yesterday, but I'll say it again because it's my county. For a while, we had a county veteran service office that not many of my veterans went to. They went down to Renville County when they needed help because that's where, and so again, like you say, that could skew results. It could, but there was a reason they weren't going to my county. And somehow we need to discover why that is when that happens. And frankly, I think our county boards would appreciate some input and insight too because they're not necessarily experts on that position like your organization or the Department of Veterans Affairs is. So what we're asking from you and the department, I think, moving ahead is number one, what part of these recommendations makes sense for everyone and we can go. But then what's not in these recommendations that we can go beyond? How do we get the best practices out there? How do we help you even more with the tools and the things that we need? So again, we're going to keep laying that out as we go. A general question. Are you able to get lists? It's a simple question. Do you know all the veterans that live in your county?
No.
So you can't even send them a Christmas card?
No.
Won't that be nice? I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, I'm looking for input. I'm thinking out loud here because for serving veterans, wouldn't it be nice to be able to contact them periodically with a card or with a note or, you know, just information? We're here to serve you. It's not, you know, but giving information. And I guess I'm going to ask the department along with you to try and establish how we can do that. And something simple. We had a bill come through the other day in committee that at least specified we need to know where our deceased veterans were from. Well, I want to go the other way. I want to know where our living veterans are at.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So we can help and recognize and understand where they're at and what the need. I mean, how do we staff offices? How do we put programs and dollars out there if we're not even exactly sure what's there?
We've started that with the reintegration project.
Okay.
We've got names, lists, numbers of all those individuals. We would like to try to figure out a program where we could do that. That was good for the state soldiers that are coming home.
Yep.
But the federal ones, we haven't figured out how, and we're working hard to try to get lists of those coming home so we can reach out, touch them, and do the same thing. Follow up every year.
Right.
And make sure they are getting the benefits that they deserve.
So again, that's what we're looking for from this committee, from the department, from you. Simple things that might even improve our services that might not be that difficult. But well, I'm done here now with
could
my
I,
questions. But wait a minute here. I got to put my glasses on. Just want to let everyone know the folks that came in over here are ninth grade students from Farmington Middle School, right? And they are participating in the Minnesota Historical Society Capital Historic Site Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government Tour and Education Program. So we want to welcome you. This is the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee. This is where all the money comes in this place. So you see a lot of interested people sitting here. But we're talking about veterans services, and whether you're maybe have a grandpa or grandma who was in World War II or Korea or Vietnam, but also now, as you know, we have brand new Iraqi veterans coming back who might be 18, 19 years old, so close to your age. And we're talking about how we can best offer them services and what the state, what we can do to make sure that we're taking care of their needs if they have needs out there. So that's what you're watching here today, but welcome to the committee. All right.
Chairman, real quick. Once on the website, one of the recommendations was for us to better improve our website and better improve. We are 2 weeks ago, we joined with the AMC, and they are helping us develop a website right now. We hope to have some kind of a deal on there where you could, all of us could write in questions so we could interact amongst. We do it at the city level with our city clerks, and it works really well. We hope that we develop that out of that, and I think it will.
Great, great.
That's in the works right now, being done.
Representative Hansen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate what the Chair has said about working towards problem solving. I sensed a little tone of anger in the presentation, and I know that when this topic was selected, there was anger when the auditor selected the topic for review. And I would ask that, the step now is to look at how do we move forward and how do we make the programs work the best that they can, rather than focusing on rebutting the report. I think all of us have the goal of trying to make sure that our veterans are served very well. We may disagree on how we do that. I think I followed up from the one of the earlier committees. I see Commissioner Dyrud's here, and that we've gone through this oversight question with various county services in agency after agency. And there are always some services that work very, very well and some that may need a little help. And our way is to try to coach them, not penalize them, to be able to help their clientele, and that's what we want to do. And I referred to Commissioner Dyrud that we've gone through this where we actually provided some money for some local units of government to upgrade web pages in another committee. And I'd be happy to work with you and show you how we did that, because the goal is to try to make sure we're serving folks. And we're trying to do that. And I think, as the Chair said, the report is a starting point. I'm asking you not to just focus on the report, but to take this opportunity and work with us and the department to try to figure out where we can make the best programs available for our veterans now and into the future.
And I,
it's your own
representative, Hanson, I suggest your comments. We want to be sitting at the table and help. You know, we're here because we're proud to serve our veterans. We want to do everything we can for our veterans. And we took a little offense to it when somebody said we weren't doing our job right. We think we're doing a good job, and we want to do everything for our veterans. They deserve it.
That happens to us every November, every 2 years.
Me too. Every 2 years.
Do you have anything else?
I have just a few comments here I'd like to finish,
yep,
if that's okay. In closing on the initiative, we support our veterans and all their needs. We believe we can better serve veterans at the county level. We see and talk to them on a regular basis. We agree with the MDVA commissioner when he says he would remove ambiguous legislation that says MDVA needs to supervise county employees. This is supported by the AMC, the CBSO Association, and the MDVA. We ask that it be removed and we be afforded the opportunity to be a full partner in all decisions regarding support for our veterans. We know what the needs of our veterans are more than anyone. We are presently working on a code of ethics for our association. We are working very hard on a training program for new CBSOs, and it should be implemented hopefully this fall. We were very instrumental in the reintegration of our soldiers coming home from Iraq, and as you will soon see, it will be a standard nationwide, and we are very proud to have helped develop it. We have partnered with AMC and are in the process of developing a new Minnesota CBSO website that will include the ability for counties to be linked and complete their website. The biggest thing we're asking out of this, and we hope we want to be full partners. We want to be there fighting at the table for veterans, and that's what we ask of you guys. Thank you very much.
Very good. We appreciate it. Any questions for these witnesses? Seeing none, I think we'll bring the commissioner's office up now, and then anyone else in the room who wants to say a word or two is welcome to. Again, if you could just tell the pages that you're interested, but we appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we have the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Welcome to the committee, and I'll let you introduce yourselves and proceed any way you see fit to begin with. And we'll interrupt as we go if we have questions.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Clark Dyrud, Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. With me today is Mike Pugliese, our Deputy Commissioner for Programs and Services. I don't know quite what you want to hear. I know that I think Representative Hansen, you struck a very nice note there in saying that anger is really not called for at this point. I would like to point out the statutes as they are here have been around since the 40s. I was a county service officer in the 70s. It was an issue then. My mentor, who started working for the department in 1946, told stories about, you know, going back to the 40s. There's never been clarity with this statute. It clearly makes the county service office county position, but it clearly gives our department general supervision to methods of operation. It's never been clear. And I think the one thing that the OLA report did. By the way, the OLA report is actually quite a good report. It says the county service office is doing a pretty good job. It really does. And it points out that that a lot of veterans don't get their benefits, which is the truth. That's the basis of our whole point, the basis of much of your legislation. So it is confusing language, and we would welcome an input. I would like to state again for this record, I've stated it in front of your committee, Representative Hansen, I personally do not want the county veterans service officers as part of the Department of Veterans Affairs. We are not trying to take over the counties. Many of my good friends here know that, and some don't. And we've not really had open conversation recently about these issues. I'd just like to state that for the record also. We would love, there are many, many, the majority of county veteran service officers are doing an awesome job. And the report points that out. So I would welcome a chance to be at the table with the county service officers, with you. I want to point out a couple things. Thank you for the service officer enhancement grant. $100,000 of that initial grant went to fund the travel. But the county service officers worked intensively to get a system where they went to Fort McCoy. They did that. But the funding that made that possible was thanks to you and your committee. For that, you know, and that's what I'm talking about. Working together, we can accomplish so much. This is an exciting time in the history for veterans. Your point earlier, I'd just like to have. Oh, one other thing, the link that we haven't had a chance to, because I'm before you yet. We're kind of coming at a different order this year. We haven't talked about budget things, as you point out, and part of that would be a report of what's happened. Okay. Last year, you came forward with an interest in something, what became LinkFit.
We
in
came
line.
Forward.
Yes, well, but I want to give credit where credit is due. I mean, it came forward, from the legislature, from specifically here, that has been put into place since August. We're averaging 350 contacts a month, of which 250 are telephone calls, 100 are internet. We refer back to the counties. That is the point of it.
Right, and specifically to that question, and just to be clear, that is what you're doing, is giving them a phone number and a name where they can call to get their question. You don't spend hours of time on the phone.
No, totally not. And we are doing marketing for that 1-800 link that it is marketing, getting the word out.
Right.
If there is someplace a veteran, and here's the point I want to make, no one can ensure that they have outraged all the veterans in their respective areas. That just is not the case, you know what I mean there. So, I'd like Deputy Commissioner Pugliese to mention about, coincidentally, a meeting last Friday about the DD-214 situation. Can you just give a little background and speak to that quickly?
Certainly, Commissioner. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Mike Pugliese, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you, first of all, for having this hearing today. I really think this brings some things to a head. I've been very hopeful for the past 7 years as Deputy Commissioner that we would get to this point where we could address some issues and concerns and lay them out on the table and address them in partnership with the CVSOs. So I think we're going in the right direction, so I applaud you for doing this. With regards, real quick, to link that as well, it is a referral service. Now, the people that answer the phone do also administer our state soldier assistance program. So at times, they do talk to veterans about benefits, but they always refer them back to the County Veteran Service Officer if that's the appropriate referral. The CVSOs are the only ones that are allowed to apply for state soldiers assistance benefits, so they have to go back to the county. So it is purely a referral service, and we do ask the question of them when they call, are you aware of your County Veteran Service Officer? The majority of the calls we get do not know of that service. So it's a great service. If they didn't call us, they wouldn't be calling anywhere, and we're sending them right back to the county. So I think it's been a wonderful program so far. And as we discussed yesterday morning with you, we discovered as a result of the phone call, there's a lot of need. And that's where we start talking about this possible case management type of a program and the need for it out in the communities where they could receive these services, as you mentioned. And we're going to explore that further, and we want to do that with the County Veteran Service Officers to make sure that those counseling services and all the needs can be met for the veterans within the community. And the CVSOs are going to play a huge role in that because they're the ones that are going to be helping them and referring them to those services. So it is a partnership. I've been wanting a partnership, a closer partnership for years, and I hope we achieve that. The statutes are extremely confusing, a lot of ambiguity. We're not sure. We walk a very fine line, trying to do what we have to do statutorily, but also trying to do what we can to assist the County Veteran Service Officers without stepping too far. We're caught in the middle. We really would like some legislative assistance in clarifying what is our role. Should we be providing oversight or should the county? Is this county function? What is our role? We don't know clearly, and we're stuck in the middle, and it's tiresome. We'd also like to know, simple things like certification. We have a certification program. We work extremely closely with CVSOs and their certification committee on that. We have an education program. We work closely with them on that. But what are we supposed to certify? What are we certifying? What is it? There's a lot of questions that need to be answered, and I think the legislative bodies are the ones that need to do those, answer those questions, working closely with us, so that we can go in the right direction. As Commissioner Dyer mentioned, there's an element that believes we want to take them over. We want them to be state employees. Nothing could be further from the truth. We want to work closely with them, and if there's something we can do to help the program be more successful, we're on board. So I just wanted to say that as well. Some people also think that we were behind the OLA report and that we influenced the outcome. So I want to say on record, nothing could be further from the truth. And I thought Jim Nobles was here earlier, and if he wants to comment, I'm sure he can. I don't want to address it any further. And regarding the OLA report, I don't think it was intended to be a report card of the CVSOs. I think it was intended to be a snapshot of currently what's going on, and I think it captured that. I think it was intended to point out some issues, some problems, so that we could address those and make that very important service that much better. Because the veterans are the ones at the end of the day that are going to benefit from that. And that's why we're all here. That's why we do what we do, to serve veterans. And I think we need to take the right approach at looking at those recommendations, doing what needs to be recommended, sitting down and seeing, where can we start? What makes sense? And I think a lot of them make sense. So I look forward to working with the association, the service organizations, the legislative bodies, so we can implement some of these recommendations and get moving in the right direction. Commissioner wants me to touch on 214s. We just had a meeting with Congressman Walz last week. One of the issues we have is we can't get all the DD Form 214s, which are discharges for veterans, into the state. We get them for our National Guard members because the tag makes sure that we do. And we get them for some reservists and active duty members, but they have to elect themselves to have it sent to us. When we get those 214s, we do a welcome home thank you letter, inform them of their CDSO. We also send them to the County Veterans Service Officer so that they have it, and then they can reach out to them as well. What we proposed to Congressman Walz, and which he was very excited to pursue, is mandating that DOD provide us every 214, active duty and reservists. Now, we're going to be pursuing that, and hopefully that will be accomplished. And then we'll know every veteran that's coming back into the state. We'll be able to provide those to the CDSOs. We'll be able to contact them, get them more involved with reintegration, do better outreach. Some of what Lynette Labrie said is very true. You know, not every veteran is entitled to benefits. But if we're not connecting with them, we'll never know if they are. We need to at least explore the opportunity with them and see if they're entitled. And we're not doing that effectively enough. State transportation was mentioned. And that is a big need. There's a gap with statewide transportation for veterans. But I believe that there can be a statewide solution, or at the very least, it should be explored. I think we should look at doing that and take a look at that. Hearing aids were addressed, that we should provide hearing aids through SSAP. They can apply for that through the special needs portion of the state social assistance program. And we encourage that they do. And when they do, we're usually pretty liberal with that. But as you know, funds are limited. We can't just open up the door for everything. We're already this close to running out of money within the programs for this year. So we have to be mindful, of what we're going to provide. But there are opportunities for them to apply for hearing aids through that. And just one last comment. The system does work. The CDSO system works very well. That's where the rubber meets the road. They're in the counties. They're doing the grunt work, the tough work. We want to be in a supportive role to make sure that they have all the tools necessary to do and be the best that they can be so that veterans receive the best service available. And I think we have the best CDSO system in the nation. There's always room for improvement. I think we have some of the best programs in the nation, but we can improve ourselves as well. And we want to do that in concert with you and the CDSOs. I think the OLA report really gives us a good starting point. And with that, I'll take any questions.
And again, I would agree that this report, and we can't say it enough, is a good starting point. I mean, there is good information here, and I think it was a lot of positive information, too. How do we, again, I'll go back to my, first of all, to your one comment, not every, and we heard it twice, not every veteran qualifies for benefits. That's true. But on the other side of the coin, every veteran who has a need, particularly a crisis need, we want to make sure we find the help for them. And whether it's federal veterans benefits or state resources, we want to make sure we do that. That's not income dependent or geographic dependent or anything else. That's our, I think, charge to our veterans of the state, no matter who they are. And again, I'll ask you too, how do we find all these folks that are living in our county? Not just the ones that are returning now and getting, the current returning crew, but how do we find folks that are out there?
Mr. Chair, remember, outreach. And that's why we started outreach programs a few years ago, and it's been growing it ever since. Marketing, putting our name out there. CDSOs play a huge part in outreach. They're in every community. When you ask the question, do you know every veteran in your community? No, they don't. Should they? They should, but how can they? It's a very difficult thing to do.
We need to think that through.
Yeah.
It's probably as simple as just developing a database with your help, so when they go to meetings and people sign up or whatever they do, wherever we identify a veteran, we can add it to the database.
Definitely, and that's where that statewide system comes into place, where we're all on the same network. So we generate the same information. If there is reporting that's required, it's comparing apples to apples. Everybody puts the same information in. We track it the same way. We can have an actual database of Vietnam veterans, Korean veterans, World War II veterans. That would be wonderful. But outreach is key to identifying all the veterans in the community. So we need to give more tools to the CDSO so that they can do that. We need to do better marketing, and all that costs money. The CDSOs do the best they can with the resources they have. They're underfunded and they're understaffed.
And again, based on the report and based on the statutes that have been referenced a number of times, I think where we're probably moving in my mind at this point is to have counsel at the end of the table over the next few weeks develop some language that we can put forth in our bills this year as they come out to direct you and the CVSOs and the legislature and others to sit down over the interim here again or prior to the next session and then come back with an update on the statutes, changes recommended, and then all the things that we need for tools to help enhance our CVSOs and that working relationship. Because I think that'll be very healthy and probably not an exercise we've gone through in recent history. And so again, I think the report was a good starting point, but what we're going to take it as is a call to action, that we need to continue to enhance what we're doing out there and keep Minnesota number one for veteran services and benefits. That's our goal, you know. And I think we're doing that now, but we'll continue. So, questions to the commissioner or deputy commissioner? All right. Well, thank you for coming. We appreciate
it. Thank you, chair members.
And anyone else want to come up? Words of wisdom, comments, questions? Here's your chance. I always say, if I could just tell the legislators something, here we sit. Follow on anything. You want to talk about Twin Stadium or no? Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you. My name is Todd Kubinski. I am the Scott County.
Can you spell that for my?
Absolutely. K U B.
No, I meant Todd.
No.
No.
K U B I N S K I. I am the Scott County Veteran Service Officer. I currently serve as the District 2 Representative for the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. I also serve on the Education Committee and the Ethics Committee. I would like to thank you for allowing me a few minutes to speak today. We talked about the report and what we can do to move forward, and I share that philosophy. I think it's a good benchmark to tell us that there are a few issues. Personally, in my county, we had a major issue. In fact, yesterday, my predecessor received a sentencing for some impropriety, and he is going to be going to jail next month. And it's an isolated incident, but things like that do happen. I've had a lot of healing that I had to do with my veteran community and with my staff over what had happened. A couple of things that I want to put in context. We talk about the need for money for these programs, especially the special needs program and the enhancement grants. I want to share just two programs that I've worked with these grants that put in context why this money is so important. The first year that it came out, I applied for a grant to provide psychosocial evaluations for veterans who were denied service connection for their mental health condition, either due to a bad evaluation during the process of the claim or lack of information regarding their mental health condition. I contract with my own behavioral health people in Scott County. I use this money to pay for the psychosocial evaluations. I currently have 6 veterans who have entered into that program. 3 of those evaluations were submitted on what's called a reconsideration on their claim, and all 3 of them have been adjudicated service connection because of that. $500 per evaluation. We made that money up the day they were granted. Money very well spent. And that's income that they're going to have from this point forward. They're also going to be able to receive the mental health services that they need to help them deal with their mental health condition. The next year, I applied for a grant to provide emergency shelter for homeless veterans in my county because we have no shelters in Scott County. Instead of asking my veterans to go to another county to receive that service, we applied for this grant, and what I'm able to do now is put a veteran or his family up into a hotel for up to 30 days in 1-week increments until more stable or transitional housing could be arranged for them. That 30-day window is usually where the biggest gap is, where I can actually tap into other resources to get them into housing. I currently have one veteran in housing right now, and by the end of the week I'll have him into transitional housing, so he'll be stable at that point. I really wanted to share those two programs with you to kind of put in context what the CVSOs in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs can accomplish at our level. So it's important that we maintain these grants, that we keep them funded, even add more funding. I'm not afraid of asking for more money. and that we continue to provide these services. These are services that we give our veterans that I don't think any other state does. That's all I have to say. I appreciate your time, Mr. Chair. And if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Good. Well, thank you. We appreciate you coming down. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. We're going to finish up just a couple little pieces of business. Again, we'll close this part. Jim Nobles is here. You got any comments you want? You're in the room. It's your opportunity to put a period on your report that you brought us. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. And there for a while, and I came in a little bit late, I thought I was hearing a presentation or a critique of a report that I didn't sign, because even though we didn't find perfection everywhere, I think what we said is that we found a lot of people doing a lot of good work and that we just need to improve in some areas. I think a lot of the issues have already been touched on, and I very much appreciate the testimony of the commissioner and the deputy commissioner and others who have said the whole point here is to move forward to serve veterans. And that's what this report was about. I know that there was a tremendous amount of suspicion, as Representative Hansen said, when this topic was simply proposed as a topic for examination. I think there is a suspicion of anything that comes from St. Paul, whether it's the department, the legislature, or the legislative auditor. I would hope that some people might understand that there are people in St. Paul who are trying to serve the whole state, the public, and specifically veterans. And so the point was for us to go out and see how we could make some recommendations for improvement. And one of the things that I know was, again, suspected as a motive is that we would recommend that the state just take this over totally. And that's not what we came to as a recommendation. So I thought that the most important message that we came to is that, as was referred to before, this needs to be a partnership. I think we use those words. Not that the state should take this over, but that it needs to be a two-way street, a partnership, not fighting over turf, but serving veterans. So if you wanted a period on what's been said, I hope that's it.
It's been very helpful. I think one last thing before you leave the table, if you could explain both to the committee but also to the audience, how or why was this topic chosen? Because, again, I think that's always out there. Boy, they picked me, someone turned me in, someone's mad about something, and the auditor's got it. So how did you even get to this point of doing a report? I think it's just the basic information might help here,
Mr.
too.
Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that question, and it's interesting. Representative Hansen and I just were at that process. One of the reasons I couldn't be here earlier is that we were just now going through the topic selection process for 2008. And the way that occurs is that we first accumulate a long list of suggestions and issues and topics. We had over almost 65 topics that we started with.
And they come from where?
They come from everywhere. They come from citizens, they come from legislators, they come from legislative staff, they come from the executive branch, they come from anybody that wants to suggest a topic. And we only have room in our office to do staffing, to do 6 or 8 a year. And so there is then a process of winnowing down, and that's what we were doing this morning. And probably tomorrow we will present to you as legislators the list of what we might call semi-finalists from the 65 we got down to 12. And we will then ask legislators, all legislators, which among these would you like to see us evaluate? And the point often is not to get out the hammer and hit somebody over the head with an evaluation. This isn't what that exercise is all about. Oftentimes, legislators simply want, again, as was referred to, a snapshot. How are we doing? Bring back objective, fair information and give it to us. Tell us if it's positive. Tell us if it's negative. Tell us if it's somewhere in between or a mixed picture. And so that's how we got to this one. It was on the list, suggested by a variety of people. It was then remained on the list as a semi-finalist. Enough legislators generally said, yes, this is something we would like to know a little bit more about. And some legislators came to us and said, boy, I have a very well-functioning county service office, and I want you to know about that, and I hope you'll go to my county and find out and find the best practices that we should spread elsewhere. Frankly, some legislators and others came to us and said, we have problems in our county, and we'd like you to take a look at those. And we did that as well. And so that's how we got to the topic. But I also want to just say, the way we do these evaluations is that we go out and we talk to people. We don't sit in St. Paul, just gather data and analyze it and issue a report. And so in this instance, as we do in others, we went out to county service officers, we talked to them, we wanted to know their perspective, how life looks from their offices. We talked to people in the department. We used the data that was there. And we recognized, just as others do, the data is not perfect. But I think we made a fair representation of the data as it exists. Would we like better data? Absolutely. And I think you've just been talking about that. We were, frankly, a little bit shocked that we couldn't just go to a database and find out all the veterans so that we could have the proper measure of who's out there and where they are. But that data doesn't exist. The other point I want to make is that part of our routine process is that people who are affected by our evaluation have an opportunity to review it in draft. So the department reviewed this report, made suggestions, as did a representative of the county veteran service officers. They put forth their representative to review this draft and made recommendations, and we sat down with him, with people from the department, and took their suggestions, and you see a response in the report from both those entities. And it's a somewhat different response than I think you heard today. So we did want to include them. We did want to talk to them, as we always do. So I appreciate this opportunity to speak.
Very good. Thank you. That was a good explanation. And we appreciate your work, Mr. Noble.
Thank you.
All right. Here we go. We're going to a couple of quick business items. I need to go back. We're going to reconsider a motion on a bill because we sent it to the wrong place. And we need to get it to the right place, and it hasn't been reported on the floor yet, so just bear with me. We're going to reconsider the motion on House File 2683, which was sent to the Finance Committee back on the meeting of February 20th. So I'll make that motion to reconsider. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed. That motion prevails. Now, Representative Tremba removes her motion from the table, whereas her bill was recommended to pass and be referred to finance, but she renews or makes a motion now that House File 2683 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Government Operations. We got to get her over there because there was a board in there. And if she doesn't make their deadline, her bill's dead. So we got to get her to GovOps, and we don't want that to happen to her. So that's the new motion. It's going to go back to the floor and to GovOps. Any questions? All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed. Your bill passes, Representative Tremba, and it's on its way. And then Representative Doty moves the minutes of February 26th and February 20th, as you have in your file folders. Any questions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Meeting is adjourned.